You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Publishing will launch Simple Grace. The digest-sized monthly magazine is directed at the inspirational Christian market. Simple Grace aims for a nationwide distribution of 200,000 with a $3.99 cover price. Bauer publishes more than a dozen magazines, including Woman's World, In Touch, and Life and Style Weekly. I'm Ron Taylor, and you're listening to USA Headline News.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they'll live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their own terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within your reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-713. 6600. That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, member FINRA and SIPC.
On today's program, I'll be talking about the 10 things you should do every day before 9 a.m., the 4 financial habits of highly successful people, how social media can boost your company's sales, why J.P. Morgan is watching their employees, the 2 best ways from keeping your best people from quitting, and the 6 best marketing ideas I've ever heard. It's Thursday, April 9th, 2015. I'll have all that and more right now on Taking Care of Business.
Taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business. And working overtime.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. This program is called Taking Care of Business, and for the next hour, we're going to talk about issues affecting businesses large and small here in the borough of Flemington in beautiful Hunterdon County, New Jersey, and on the national scene as well. Before we get going, a brief check of the weather shows the temperature is currently 40 degrees at 12:04. Today, it'll be cloudy and foggy with rain tapering off later today and a high of 47 degrees, a low of 42. For tomorrow, or as I call it, I'm leaving on a jet plane Friday to visit colleges with my son. It'll be mostly cloudy with a couple of showers and a possible thunder shower or two, a high temperature of 72 and a low of 41. Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 60, a low of 35. Sunday, or I'm coming back on a jet plane Sunday, will be sunny with a high of 66 and a low of 39. Current check of the financial market shows the Dow is currently down 26.39 to 17,876.12. The NASDAQ is down 8.27 to 4942.55. The S&P 500 down 1.41 to 2,080.49. Oil is currently up 30 cents to $50.72 per barrel. And gold down $8.60 to $1,194.50 an ounce. Well, as you heard during the news break, Elizabeth Warren says she doesn't believe in the death penalty for Johan Tsarnaev. I do. When she talks about, you know, that it's, you know, he'll, you can't rehabilitate that. There's just no way. And on this one, the quicker, the better. If you need me to push the plunger on the needle, I'll be glad to do it for you. But with all of the people who died and were injured at the hands of Johan Tsarnaev and his brother, absolutely, death penalty is the only appropriate sentence. in that case. Well, March Madness is over, and the Duke Blue Devils are your national champions after defeating Wisconsin on Monday. But more importantly, I am the champion of my NCAA pool, having picked Wisconsin and Duke in the national championship game. Can't touch this.
Did you bring the cavalry?
Woman, I am the cavalry.
Yes, I am. Well, it's time to get into the program here. Taking Care of Business is what you're listening to on 100inchamberradio.com. And we're glad that you can join us for this afternoon as we get into the program. And again, every week I remind you, if you have something you want to talk about, you want something you want me to research and then discuss on the radio, by all means, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com. Connect with me on LinkedIn or on my Twitter feed at JimGano83. And be glad to share your ideas and everything that you want to talk about as well. And it just helps the program when we're talking about topics that affect you. You know, there's whether it's a local issue, a national issue, an employee issue, an employer issue, we'd be glad to bring it out for you. But let's get the whole thing started today with 10 things that every manager should be doing before 9 a.m. And a lot of times, you don't have to limit it just to managers. I think a lot of times, when we talk about the traits of successful people, the traits of whether it's rich people or successful people or motivated people, whatever the case may be, everybody, it can apply to all of them. But recent research suggests that there are certain basic things that successful business managers have in common. Actually, there are many more, but for the sake of brevity, let's take the 10 most vital factors as listed by top management officials across various fields, professions, and industries. They say that the number one thing to do is to do the most important item first. Now, according to its priority, you want to do that item first. Effective managers generally work down from the top of their to-do list to enumerate items according to the importance on their list. Then they simply cross off the completed work when it's finished. A lot of people will say that the reason for this is that you're fresher in the morning and you have a better chance of putting 100% effort into it versus putting it off, you know, that mountain seems to grow a little higher, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's almost insurmountable. I did that this morning, left the house around 6 o'clock, came in. I had a pretty big job with a deadline of noon today that had to be engraved. And, you know, all week I've been worried about it. But today I said, I'm coming in early, I'm getting it done. And, you know, it was done in 2 hours. And then I had extra time to do more things. They also, and this is a recurring theme, it's been in a lot of the stories that we've been covering here. And so many people, and you may be doing it right now, you may have your cell phone or your smartphone in your hand right now waiting for that next vibration or beep to tell you that you have another all-important email. What the folks who are saying that business managers are successful is check email periodically. You can almost set alarms like 10 o'clock, noon, 2 o'clock, 4, but only do it on a periodic basis. Now, while sounding perhaps counterproductive, recent research by a marketing software company called HubSpot shows that the highest rate for successful click-through responses is around 6 o'clock in the morning. According to Mike Volpe, the chief marketing officer for HubSpot, the best time to send an email is when you know the actual time that people check into their email. In contrast to early morning emails, Volpe points out that the worst time to send emails is around 4 o'clock in the afternoon when people begin planning their exit from work. Now, a few months ago, actually about a year ago, I was involved in a constant contact seminar, and they said the best time to send out a constant contact was at around 10:15 in the morning, and they argued that this was when most people were returning from breaks. They'd already checked their morning emails, and now the inbox, if you will, was a little more empty, and they would take more time to read your email. HubSpot counters that and says 6 o'clock. So when I started doing marketing, our email marketing after that, I started sending it out at 6 in the morning, and the open rates for my constant contacts went through the roof. So, and the click-throughs as well, because people, again, they're fresher, and they just have more time, and they take the time to read those emails. Number three, they want you to wake up early, exercise, and have inspirational disciplines. Now, apparently, being an early morning riser seems to be one characteristic of winners in a success-driven world. The late British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher never slept later than 5 in the morning, and Michael Eisner of the Disney Organization always got up by 4:30. Now, in regards to exercise, the Chinese discipline of Tai Chi Chuan now is growing in popularity among management and leaders. This ancient martial art form focuses primarily on concentration and relaxation. Another characteristic of productive morning people and managers is their spiritual lives. Many engage in prayer, reading the Bible, or simple meditation as their first priority. Cher Wang, who's an entrepreneur, philanthropist, and the richest woman in Taiwan at $2.3 billion, often says that the Bible is the best management manual there is. As president and co-founder of HTC Corporation, she receives revenues from one of every six smartphones sold in the United States. Number four, they say plan out your day the night before. Everyone should have a to-do list, especially managers. However, rather than writing the list on the same day that things need attention, late-night planning sessions are better for writing the next day's morning action list. Then tackle the day purposefully and strategically once daylight breaks. And this is a habit I've had for years, probably 20 years or so, where I look at what I accomplished during the day, what I didn't get to, and I move that to the front part of the next day. And it's a great thing to walk in the morning and know there's a list standing there of what you need to do. And before I came to the studio this afternoon, I left two post-it notes on my computer of the first two things I have to do as soon as I get back into the office. Number five, as your mom always told you, you need to eat a healthy breakfast. Now, eating a bowl of sugar-laden cereal or a donut or three cups of coffee does not nurture your brain cells. In contrast, eating a low-carbohydrate breakfast with a side of protein provides plenty of fuel for the rest of the day's activities. Number six, they want you to do something for yourself. Management people always take time for themselves, whether it is fixing their gaze at a vision board, they put together or simply planning for that special vacation trip. Envisioning one's goals in life is just as important for busy managers and executives as it is for their staff and employees. So go for it. Number seven, avoid scheduling afternoon meetings. The best time to schedule a meeting is when everyone is most awake and their minds are not yet unhindered by the accumulated stress of the day. So try to keep all meetings before 12 or 1 o'clock. You also want to dress for business success. There is something to be said for managers who dress the part and expect their staff to do the same. Being comfortable is one thing, but being too laid back usually produces the same level of productivity or no productivity at all. Recently, we had two new hires in my office just doing assembly work, and I noticed that when they started, it was blue jeans and a t-shirt, and then later it was sweatpants and sweatshirts and all that, and I was like, at some point, I knew I had to do something about it. So finally, I called them both in. I said, look, we have to portray a professional image. We have customers coming back into our warehouse production area. We're trying to make sales. And when I look at you two, it looks like you just rolled out of bed. So if you can, blue jeans, collared shirt, work boots, and every now and then try to run a comb through your hair. And for the next, ever since that, which happened about a month ago, they've been coming in every day looking sharp, clean shaven, hair combed. You know, they're taking a little bit of pride in themselves and in the work they do. And their productivity has definitely increased. Number nine, inspirational, motivational teachings. High-achieving manager leaders typically listen to regular videos, tapes, and attend seminars that inspire their inner self and their inner man of others in the company, organization as well. Sometimes it's a matter of whether you have a mentor or you have somebody you follow. Now, years ago, and I think we mentioned him in a later story in the show, people were all about Stephen Covey and the Seven Habits. And then people, you know, there's many people who have latched on to Anthony Robbins, Zig Ziglar, and things like that. If you find somebody that has a message that you like, that you latch onto, then watch their, more than likely they have videos. In sales, a great person to listen to would be Grant Cardone. As far as motivational and work ethic, a guy like Larry Winget is ideal. In negotiation and business sense, watching Marcus Lemonis on CNBC's The Profit is hugely educational for me, as I love to watch how he negotiates both with business owners and vendors. So if you find somebody that you like and you want to follow them, by all means do it. Number two or 10, incorporate desirable habits for 21 days. And this is something that when I learned this about 20, 25 years ago, I started preaching to family and friends that, you know, psychologists and motivational trainers have long known that doing something or not doing something for 21 consecutive days will either make or break a habit. So therefore, choose wisely. Quitting smoking, 21 days, that's 3 weeks. Now, for me, and I can tell you, I was addicted, and not to Girl Scout cookies, I'm never giving those up, but I was addicted to Diet Coke, and I would have two, sometimes three, 20-ounce bottles per day of Diet Coke. Now, this year, and I don't know what made me do it, other than the fact that my wife was nagging me just a little bit, but I knew it wasn't the healthiest option for me. On Ash Wednesday, I gave it up for Lent, and I've not had a sip of Diet Coke since. You know, it's been water or iced tea, but I've given up soda altogether. And after the 21st day, and even after like the first five or six, I just didn't miss it. So when you're trying to change something, whether it's you want to be more productive, you want to be, you want to lose weight or something like that, you got to at least invest 3 weeks, 21 days to make that habit a reality. We're going to step away and take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about four financial habits of highly successful people. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, this is psychic medium Trish Woods with the program Afterlife Real Life that airs every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. My co-host is psychic medium Jane Davidson from the United Kingdom. We have listeners and callers from all over the world. We're looking forward to hearing what you want to know about with metaphysics, spirituality, personal spirit experiences, psychic work, and more. From 1 to 3 p.m. every Thursday, you can call in or tune in, asking Jane and I your questions, your personal ideas, and maybe getting help with your own personal life. Afterlife Real Life, every Thursday, 1 to 3 p.m.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend.
Did you bring the cavalry?
Woman, I am the cavalry.
You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inChamberRadio.com. Glad you could join us. My name is Jim Gano, the owner of Crown Trophy here in Flemington. Coming to you as we do every Thursday at this time for another edition of Take Care of Business. Glad you can join us. You know, a couple of people have been texting me saying, what is with that little audio clip, you know, Woman, I Am the Cavalry? Well, the other night I was watching the Ellen Show with my wife, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson was on. And that is a line that he uses in the movie Furious 7 and a part of the Furious franchise, which I've seen a few of them and I enjoy it. And but when I saw that clip, I was like, man, I just love that. Because so many times, you know, when people come into our store or something like that, say, you got to help me. You'll be my hero. I need awards for this afternoon. And, you know, and it just happened a few weeks ago where, you know, a woman needed 60 trophies, came into the store around 2:30, needed them by 5:30 that night. We got it done. No problem. And she goes, well, you're my hero. When I saw that line, I was like, woman, I am the cavalry. So really enjoy that clip. We may be using it a little more often here in the show. And if you get a chance, go out and see Furious 7. Broke all kinds of records last week, doing about $140 million in the box office. Well, before the break, I mentioned we're going to talk about the four financial habits of highly successful people. And Stephen Covey, as I mentioned earlier, the author of the wildly successful book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, wrote, depending on what they are, Our habits will either make us or break us because we become what we repeatedly do. And that's true. Habits, and this is what we talked about earlier, that 21-day creates a habit. The healthy and consistent ones, that is, can make all the difference in helping us go from good to great in any area of life, especially our finances. Bad habits can be just as powerful, but in the opposite direction. Now, I've had the privilege of interviewing and talking to several entrepreneurs, authors, and financial pros over the years, each of whom has generously shared their personal financial habits. And here are four of the best that they've talked about. And the first one they say is they want you to flex your idea muscle. Now, entrepreneur James Altucher, who's the best-selling author of Choose Yourself, says that one habit he practices multiple times a day is generating ideas, exercising what he calls his idea muscle. He believes that ideas are the currency of life. Now, look around you. If you're at work, whether you're a business owner, whether you're an employee, a manager, think about the ways that you can make your business better. Maybe it's doing something different in the showroom or introducing a new product, or sometimes it's even a process improvement that will make the company better. That's where you flex your idea muscle. And I'm willing to bet that the folks over at Success Communications Group, they do this all day long. When they're trying to think of an ad campaign for a new product or a new client, they have to flex that idea muscle all day long. So that's the kind of thing where I love that terminology, flexing your idea muscle. Just be thinking about how you can make your business better. Every day when I close the show, I give you some great advice from my father, and I think that it lends itself to that thought here. The key is to share your ideas freely with others. Now, Altucher says that he's been amazed at how many times he's given out free ideas, and abundance has come back to him, not just in the form of money, but in the form of contacts, connections, and future opportunities. So when you're networking and you hear a person describing a problem, if it's right on the top of your head and you say, I think you should try this, by all means, give it out. He said recently he was invited to speak at Amazon's headquarters in Seattle after submitting several ideas to the head of business development on how the company can improve its publishing, a connection he made via a friend of a friend of a friend. He says, I got to meet essentially all the people running their self-publishing division, and they all showed me what they were working on, he said. I didn't get paid for it, nor do I expect to get paid for it, but who knows what future opportunities I'll have when I self-publish my next book. They also tell you to tuck away more than 10%. Now, forget the standard savings rule of thumb that says you should save 10% of your paycheck for a rainy day. Melinda Emerson of Small Biz Lady, at Small Biz Lady, Twitter fame and author of Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, says that she habitually and automatically saves 20% of her every paycheck. I also have an emergency savings account for my business for rainy days when people don't pay on time, she adds. I put safeguards in place so I'm never broke, ever. The next, they set it, but they don't forget it. Setting up a savings and payment system is one habit highly successful people practice to keep their financial house in order. They automate their bill payments and their money transfers. But they don't turn a blind eye once they set up the system. They know it's important to still maintain awareness of where their money's going. I check my bank accounts every week just to keep a good pulse on where things stand, says Shema Hyder, the best-selling author of The Zen of Social Media Marketing and an international keynote speaker who's been invited to share the stage with President Obama and the Dalai Lama. Financial planner and founder of Financially Wise Women, Brittany Castro, chimes in saying, one of the biggest tips I can share with people is to do a weekly money date, a time where you check in with your money every week. You're reviewing your spending and maybe your budget. It just brings this whole new level of awareness. And that's really key, both on a personal level and in business. You have to know what's coming in, what's going out, and making sure that there's a balance in between. And they also come up with, they're not just go-getters, they're go-givers. Over 20 years ago, New York Times bestselling financial author David Bach heard self-made billionaire John Templeton speak, and he said that people in life are taught to be go-getters, but instead should be go-givers. And that had a huge impact on me, says Bush, who is now vice chairman at Edelman Financial Services. Since then, the bulk of my life has been focused on how can I be of the most service, with the belief that if I'm of the most service, good things will come back to me. That life is a giant circle of karma, and that the more you give out, the more comes back. And that's really been true in my life. I've even when I'm overworked or overstressed or things aren't going the way I want, I remember that I signed up for this attitude that I was going to live my life in service. Jackie Zenner, the first female trader turned partner at Goldman Sachs and now the chief engagement officer at Women Moving Millions, echoes Bach's sentiments. Give generously, she says. I'm spending a lot of my time now, and I continuously challenge myself to think about at any point in time how generous I can be, not only with my money, but with my time. So four great habits of highly successful people. Maybe you're already doing some of them. Maybe you can incorporate some into your life as it moves forward and see whether or not it will help you in your life as well. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100andchamberradio.com. J.P. Morgan is working on a new employee surveillance program. Now, this is something, you know, that people are always concerned about. They say, well, I think my boss is reading my emails. I think he's listening to my phone calls. Well, J.P. Morgan, you can bet your life on it. The idea is to predict behavioral patterns and monitor for employees who may go off the reservation. Spotting bad behavior before it takes place is becoming a priority for the giant Wall Street firm, which has reportedly spent more than $36 billion with a B in fines and legal battles in the aftermath of the financial crisis. The new program will roll out on the trading side first and later the investment banking and asset management departments. J.P. Morgan has reportedly spent $730 million and hired 2,500 new compliance workers to track behavior. Other Wall Street banks have hired outside firms who are able to analyze emails, chat conversations, and phone calls for red flags, according to Bloomberg. Regulators are stepping up their efforts to curb potentially dangerous risk-taking on Wall Street, from infiltrating boardroom meetings to forcing banks to spin off risky subsidiary businesses. But in this instance, it looks like J.P. Morgan is being proactive about employee behavior. A February company memo from Chief Operating Officer Matt Zames reportedly reminded employees of the impacts of scandals on everyone's bonuses. And for executives, reducing legal bills is crucial in order to balance the books going forward. Remember, legal fees were a major black mark on Wall Street earnings last quarter. So it happens everywhere, whether you're in a large pharmaceutical company, whether you're in a large banking institution, wherever you are, you can bet that you're bosses at some point have the access to and can look at your emails and other information. I can just picture a bunch of people hitting the delete button right now. Well, last week I talked to you about a pizzeria in the wake of the new Indiana law that with regard to the Religious Freedom Act, where a pizzeria called Memories Pizzeria said that they would serve gay customers, but that they would not cater gay weddings. And I talked to you about how there was a backlash immediately. There were protesters outside of Memories Pizzeria. There was a fake website created bashing the owner. There were all kinds of, you know, crazy, vicious posts on Facebook and other media. They were creating negative reviews on Yelp. And now it looks as if that backlash may have actually turned around for them. Social conservatives gave money to relieve the financial loss after the pizzeria owner was rebuked for saying that she would not cater a gay wedding. Lawrence Billy Jones III, a reporter for The Blaze, a conservative news site, started a GoFundMe page Wednesday to raise $45,000 for the family-owned pizzeria in Walkerton to relieve the financial loss endured by the proprietor Stand for Faith. By 2:30 p.m. Eastern Time Friday, they had far surpassed their goal, raking in more than $722,000. As of yesterday, they were close to $1 million. Now, countless people condemned the small business after co-owner Crystal O'Connor appeared on WBND to discuss her support for RFRA, or Senate Bill 101, which critics say legalizes discrimination against gays and lesbians. O'Connor claims she would serve gay customers but believes her Christian faith prevents her from catering their wedding receptions. If a gay couple came in and wanted us to provide pizza for their wedding, we would have to say no, O'Connor told the local ABC affiliate. Just curious, who gets pizza at a wedding? After the segment went viral, Memories Pizza closed temporarily due to threatening phone calls, social media messages, and Yelp reviews. Dana Loesch, who's a conservative TV host on The Blaze, who helped kick off the GoFundMe page, interviewed O'Connor about what life has been like since the media firestorm broke out around her family. "We're very hurt and confused, and we stood up for what we believe," O'Connor said. "The news just took it totally out of proportion. They lied about it." O'Connor told Loesch her family is considering leaving Indiana and that they are not sure if it will be safe to reopen. Indiana Governor Mike Pence, who signed the bill into law 2 weeks ago, called upon lawmakers on Tuesday to provide additional legislation to clarify that Senate Bill 101 would not enable discrimination. On Thursday morning, the Republican legislative leaders released an amendment that prohibits discrimination based on race, sexual orientation, gender identity, and other factors. It also forbids businesses from invoking the law as a legal defense for refusing to provide services. But the new measure does not apply to religious groups, such as churches and their affiliated schools or religious nonprofits. Both the House and the Senate still need to approve the changes so Pence can sign off on them. Now, I was talking earlier about Marcus Lemonis, and this is the gentleman who owns Camping World and hundreds of other businesses that he's invested in. He had a post last week on Facebook, and it was pretty well written, where he said that he is currently, for this season of the show, The Prophet, working with a business in Indiana. And as a result of this law, he's questioning whether or not he should actually go ahead and invest in this business. Does he want to do business in the state of Indiana? And his take on this was that business owners should have the right to either accept or refuse to do business with certain people. So I went out and I posted a reply, and there were about, at the time, there were about 338 comments to his post, some negative, a lot negative, and some positive. So I posted that, you know, here I am, a small business owner, and I don't care whether you're white, black, green, red, doesn't matter to me. What I look at is that the people who are coming into my store are, they're not customers, they're not clients. We call them friends because they're helping us to build our business. And when you take it a step further, when I'm able to then reinvest into the community by sponsoring organizations, nonprofits, and things like that, well, that only happened because these customers have come in and, you know, given me money that I can then give to others. Now, of course, some knucklehead in Kansas then goes on and on to reply to me and says, okay, Jim, so if the Westboro Baptist Church came in and said, you know, death to gays, would you print those banners if they wanted to order 10 banners? And I replied back to him very simply, I reserve the right not to print anything that we deem offensive. And it's done in two fronts. If I feel that you, the sign or the banner that you're going to create is going to be offensive to someone, and everything at some point could be deemed offensive, but if you can tell that there's a lot of hate and vitriol behind the message, I don't have to print that. There's five other sign shops within a mile of me. Go ahead, take it over there. I don't need to do it. So in that respect, I would refuse it. But also I have to look at my employees too. If they're going to be offended, and they're, for all of you fantasy football owners out there that think you have cute football team names, sometimes they're very degrading to women. I don't want my staff engraving that. I don't want them to even see that order. So when we take that order, I'll say, I'll engrave, I'll take care of this, you know. But, you know, why should my female employees be exposed to that? So there's arguments pro and con on both sides. And I just think that at some point, you know, we can't just be that hard line all the time. It's this or it's that, because I think it's in the Bible somewhere. You know, let he who has no sin cast the first stone. And I guarantee you, if you look at that in business, if you look at that from either the pro-gay side or the anti-gay side, you're going to find closet. You're going to find closets full of things, and no stones will be thrown. We're going to step away, take a break, and when we come back, we will talk about the expert's guide to personal branding.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Listening and taking care of business right here on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. And a brief check of the weather shows that today it'll be cloudy and foggy with rain tapering off later in the day with a high of 47 and a low of 42. For tomorrow, it'll be mostly cloudy with a couple of showers and a possible thunder shower or two in the evening with a high of 72 and a low of 41. Saturday, mostly sunny skies with a high of 60 and a low of 35. And on Sunday, it'll be sunny with a high of 66 degrees and a low of 39.
Taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business.
Well, as we talk often on this program about social media and social branding, et cetera, social marketing, or using social media as a marketing tool, I just kind of wanted to bring it all together, if you will, and talk about what some of the experts are saying you need to be doing in order to be effective. One of the arguments that I've been having with, let's call them the more mature business owners, and that would be anybody over 40, 45, or 50, something like that, is that they don't understand social media, and as a result, they don't want to use social media. To them, even something as basic as Facebook is not a good marketing tool. They're still stuck in, I take out newspaper ads, I take out radio ads, I put up a billboard or something like that, and that's advertising to them. The fact of the matter is that with newspaper circulation down nearly 70%, who's reading those ads? You know, people now, you can say, oh, well, I advertise on this radio station or that radio station, but more and more people are subscribing to satellite radio, or they have Pandora or something like that, where they don't even have to listen to commercials anymore. So how do you get your message to your prospective customer? And of the nearly 2,000 attendees at Social Media Marketing World, including a veritable who's who of social media royalty, no one has more followers than social giant Guy Kawasaki, and his Twitter feed is at Guy Kawasaki, with over 10.5 million followers across multiple platforms, including more than 1.5 million followers on Twitter alone. Guy is reminiscent of the old E.F. Hutton commercial that says, when Guy Kawasaki talks, people listen. But today, people do far more than listen. They engage, they share, they retweet by the dozens, hundreds, and sometimes thousands. And thankfully for the rest of us, Guy and many of his fellow digerati were extremely generous with sharing their strategies, learnings, and advice for gaining and maintaining a personal brand on social media. He said there are two kinds of people on social media, people who want more followers and the people who are lying saying they don't. As Homer Simpson might say, it's funny because it's true. So how does he do it? Simply put, he curates nearly 100 posts across multiple platforms every single day. His content is, as he will tell you, all over the map in an effort to attract a wide audience. And his main strategy, he said, is to experiment constantly. I view my role as a curator. I want to inform, assist, and entertain people, he said. When followers share my content, it assists them as curators and expands my own reach. Pam Moore, who can be reached at Pam Marketing Nut, also has a ton of followers, but I didn't get 200,000 followers because I worried about getting followers, she said. Instead, her strategy is to invest in human beings. Though many individuals and brands are loath to do so, several social superstars recommend repeating successful content. So repeat your tweets and you will triple your engagement, Guy Kawasaki said. It's worth repeating tweets several times because most people will miss it the first time around, added Rob Wolf, who's at That Rob Guy. Eric Tung, who's at Eric T. Tung, concurred. He said the percentage of your followers that will see your individual tweet is very low. He estimated that numbers to be around 7 to 12% of your followers. Pam also noted that great content has a long shelf life because many people will go back through feeds and repost older content. So what makes for great content? Social media content should be follow the right acronym, said Mark Schaefer. And he's at Mark W. Schaefer. He said it should be relevant, interesting, timely, and entertaining. Mary Smith, who's at Mary Smith, added this advice, carefully pick content, see what resonates, and then be okay with repeating posts. In addition, Guy advised every post should have a picture or a video. Right there, you would double engagement. This applies to brands as well as individuals, and natively uploading video to Facebook rather than linking to YouTube makes a humongous difference. Several speakers also mentioned leveraging multiple social media platforms for the same content because the audiences are different, and leveraging the same content across multiple mediums. One blog post could be deconstructed into multiple tweets, Facebook posts, Instagram photos, and YouTube videos. And a new discernible theme at this year's conference was speakers using Meerkat or Periscope to live stream their own presentations and then presumably saving the recordings for future use. If you're having trouble developing your own content, start by sharing other great content. Curation is just as valuable as creation these days, Guy said. Automation was another frequently mentioned theme. Apps like Buffer are critical for properly timing content so you don't look like a spammer, Pam said. But Eric quickly added, don't do any kind of auto-favoriting, auto-retweeting, or auto-DMing. One appropriate use case for automation, he said, is if you need to reach multiple time zones across the world. And finally, one critical factor that can't be overlooked is engaging directly with your audience. If you're not going to be a social, get out of social, said Ted Rubin, who's at Ted Rubin. A network gives you reach, and a community gives you power. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing over the next couple of weeks, and I've read several articles on this, is once we do our Constant Contact newsletters, in the next coming weeks, we're going to start featuring a little video presentation, probably a minute to a minute and a half, and it could be about a featured product. It could be about, what was the one I really want to do? Oh, yeah, we had one new sign product that I really want to show, but it actually has to be demonstrated. And to show it to the businesses that I want to target, it would be very hard for me to go, you know, store to store to store to do this. However, I can do it in one quick email post, and hopefully we'll have a good return on that. So I'll keep track of that for you as well and let you know how it goes. But the standard email anymore isn't really getting the message across. But when people can see a video and click on it and spend 30 seconds, a minute, 90 seconds, you know, watching something, they will do that. And that's what seems to be grabbing the most attention. So that is something to be looking out for in your marketing strategies as well. In the preview, I mentioned the six best marketing ideas that I've ever heard, and wanted to go over those with you as well. Some of these may surprise you a little bit, and you know, sometimes when we talk about marketing, you think that when you're coming up with a campaign that you're, and Russ and Tom and the folks at Success could always add to this, there's a key demographic, and it's usually 18 to 49 years old. Sometimes it may be 18 to 24, 18 to 35, but there's always these demographics, and it's the same thing in radio. What is your target audience? What block do you want to win? And, you know, when you're pitching your station to advertisers, then you want to make sure that you can sell them on what, on the people who will be buying their product. So if you say, you know, it was funny because years ago I owned a radio station in Bridgewater, and for the first time ever, we were number one in the Arbitron book, and it was in the age group of like women age 65 to 79 or something like that. Who cared? These people aren't buying anything. But in the New York Metro book that we were in, we were competing with CBS, FM, and all those. We started saying we're number one, and people started buying into it. And we were number one in that demographic. But, you know, they thought that we were the number one radio station. They took a lot of pride in that, and the ad buys started rolling in until they realized we were number one with 69-year-old women. So here in marketing, what I want you to think about is that rule number one, 50 isn't fatal. Now, I always like the answer attributed to Willie Sutton when he was asked why he robbed banks. He allegedly said, because that's where the money is. I know traditional marketing wisdom is to target those 18 to 49-year-olds, but that has never made much sense to me or to the marketing people that I deal with and respect a lot. What 18-year-old that isn't named Kardashian has a lot of money? And even most 48-year-olds are burdened with paying not only a mortgage, but now college tuition as well. It just makes sense to me to try to sell stuff to the people who can afford to buy it, and most of those people are 50 years old. Number two, you should explain why you are different or better. And I can't begin to count the number of people who believe they can put out a Me Too product and believe they are going to win because they say, quote, we are terrific marketers. Self-confidence is a wonderful thing. Self-delusion is not. Unless your product is actually unique, and there aren't many of them, spend a lot of time figuring out why what you have is better than what your competition has, and then get out there and tell the world. Number three, there's a reason David won. Large companies know there is great strength in size, but there is great weakness as well. While people may believe that larger companies know more, with that positive perception comes a burden of inaccessibility. Big companies are seen as cold and not caring. So use that weakness against them. Number four, you don't need to think of all the good ideas. You don't have to have a corner on wisdom, and you can't hire enough people who do. So figure out who has the best ideas and buy those ideas or get access to them to supplement your marketing. Number five, too much research is a bad thing. Take focus groups, for example. If you want to test whether an idea will resonate, they're great. If you want to tell if you have a radical new idea that is wonderful, they stink. New products are, by definition, beyond everyone's frame of reference. Your role is to come up with the better idea. That is not the role of a focus group. Number six, to listen to the customer, you have to talk to the customer. As you get bigger, you get insulated and you stop interacting with customers. No, sure, you can come up with excuses for why that happens. You're busy. There are meetings to go to, numbers to crunch. All those excuses are lame. If you don't talk to your customers, you lose touch with the marketplace. There are six great marketing ideas, and I love them. And, you know, there's times when I find myself, you know, pulling away from the customers, and then I have to jump back in and get out into the showroom and make sure that we're engaging, because sometimes, and I don't know why, but if people see my business card and it says Jim Gano, owner, they get the conversation changes than a card that just says Jim Gano and I work at Crown Trophy. I don't know why that phenomenon is. I have yet to figure that out after 6 years, but it's true. You're listening to Taking Care of Business right here on 100inchamberradio.com. We're going to step away for our break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the great worker shortage of 2015. We'll be right back.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use, let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent.
Do you need a great sign to promote your business or organization? Signs by Crown of Flemington is your local professional sign shop and can provide you with high-quality banners, lawn signs, vehicle graphics, pop-up displays, window graphics, wall lettering, magnets, and much more. Signs by Crown can help you with the design, layout, creation, and installation of your signs. Signs by Crown is located inside Crown Trophy at 33 Rayville Avenue in Flemington. Remember, if you have something to say, say it with a sign from Signs by Crown.
Hi, this is Ruth Ann Disatel, celebrant officiant with Celebration of a Lifetime. When people ask me why I joined the Chamber, it's because I want to get to know you and what you're all about. And I want you to get to know me and what I'm all about. And together, I'd like to celebrate what we can do for Hunterdon County.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HunterdonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Listening and Taking Care of Business right here on HunterdonChamberRadio.com. I apologize, a little distracted. I wanted to give you an update. The Masters is ongoing today, and currently in first place is Charlie Hoffman with 5-under after 18 holes. Russell Henley, 4-under after 16, and Paul Casey is tied in third at 3-under par. Try to get you a little more information on that as far as some of the other favorites currently playing. And we'll have that for you just a little bit later on. Tom Watson, 1-under. Bubba Watson, also 1-under. Jim Furyk is even. Zach Johnson, even. And looking for a guy named Woods. Don't see his name coming up yet. So, actually, he hasn't teed off yet. So, as we get more information, we'll pass that along to you. But I know, just like the NCAAs, there's a lot of people that are streaming some golf today on their work computers. Nothing wrong with that. Particularly if you like golf. Well, there is a great worker shortage, and this is something that kind of goes counter to what we've been hearing over the last few years when everybody was talking about high unemployment rates. So when I say there's a worker shortage, people kind of look at me a little funny and say, don't we have 5.5% unemployment? How can that possibly be? Well, here's how it happens. The great conundrum of the U.S. economy is that we have record numbers of working age people that are out of the labor force at the same time that we have businesses that are desperately trying to find workers. Now, in his example, the American Transportation Research Institute estimates there are 30,000 to 35,000 trucker jobs that could be filled tomorrow. If workers would take these jobs, a shortage that could rise to 240,000 by 2022. Now, while the jobs market overall remains weak, demand is high in certain sectors. For skilled and reliable mechanics, welders, engineers, electricians, plumbers, computer technicians, and nurses, jobs are plentiful. One can often find a job within 48 hours. As Bob Funk, who's the president of Express Services, which matches almost 500,000 temporary workers with employers each year, if you have a useful skill, we can find you a job. But too many are graduating from high school and college without any skills at all. The lesson, to play off the famous Waylon Jennings song, is Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be philosophy majors. 3 years ago, the chronic disease of the economy was a shortage of jobs. This shortage persists in many sectors, but two other shortages are now being felt, the shortage of trained employees and of low-skilled employees willing to work. Patrick Doyle, who's the president of Domino's Pizza, says that the franchises around the country are having a hard time filling delivery and clerical positions. It's a very tight labor market out there right now. This shortage has an upside for workers because it allows them to bid up wages. When Walmart announced last month that wages for many starter workers would rise to $9 an hour, well above the federal legal minimum, they weren't being humanitarians. They were responding to a tightening labor market. The idea that blue-collar jobs aren't a pathway to middle class and higher is antiquated and wrong. Factory work today is often highly sophisticated and knowledge-based, with workers using intricate scientific equipment. After several years honing their skills, welders, mechanics, carpenters, and technicians can earn upwards of $50,000 a year, which in most years still places a household with two such income earners in the top 25% for income. It's true, these aren't glitzy or cushy jobs, but they do pay a good salary. So why aren't workers filling these available jobs or getting the skills necessary to fill them? And I would post four impediments to putting more Americans back to work. First, the government discourages work. Welfare consists of dozens of different and overlapping federal and state income support programs. A recent Census Bureau study found that more than 100 million Americans collecting a government check or benefit each month. The spike in families on food stamps, Social Security, disability, public housing, and early Social Security remains very high even 5 years into this recovery. This should come as no surprise given the combination of the scaled-back welfare work requirements and the steep phase-out of benefits as a recipient begins earning income. Economist Peter Ferrara argues in his new book, Power to the People, that if, quote, we simply required work for all able-bodied welfare recipients, the number on public assistance would fall dramatically. This is what happened after the work for welfare requirements back in 1996. Second, our public school systems often fail to teach kids basic skills. Whatever happened to shop classes? We have schools that now concentrate more on ethnic studies and tolerance training than teaching kids how to use a lathe or a graphic design tool. Charter schools can help remedy this. Universities are even more negligent. Kids commonly graduate from four-year colleges with $100,000 of debt and little vocational training. A liberal arts education is valuable, but it should come paired with some practical skills. And third, negative attitudes towards blue-collar work. Now, I've talked to parents who say they are disappointed if their kids want to become craftsmen instead of going to college. This attitude discourages kids from learning how to make things, which contributes to sector-specific worker shortages. Meanwhile, too many people who want to go into the talking professions, lawyers, media, clergy, professions, and so on, those who can't do, become attorneys and sociology professors. I'm making friends and enemies all over the place today. Fourth, a cultural bias against young adults working. The labor force participation rate is falling fastest among workers under 30. Anytime a state tries to change laws to make it easier for teenagers to earn money, the left throws a tantrum about repealing child labor laws. The move to raise minimum wages in states and at the federal level could hardly be more destructive to young people. My own research finds that the higher the minimum wage in a state, the lower the labor force participation rate among teenagers. Anecdotally, I've always been struck by how many successful people I've met who grew up on farms and started working, milking cows and building fences, cleaning out the barn at the age of 10 or 11. They learn a work ethic at a young age, and this pays big dividends in the future. Many studies document this to be true. Fifth, higher education has become an excuse to delay entry into the workforce. I always cringe when I talk to 22-year-olds who will graduate from college and tell me their next step is to go to graduate school. Maybe by the time they are 26 or 27, they will start working. Here's an idea. Colleges could encourage kids to have 1 or 2 years of work experience before they enroll. And here's an even better idea. Abolish federal student loans and replace the free government dollars with privately sponsored college work programs. For instance, schools like College of the Ozarks requires kids to work 15 hours a week to pay their tuition. It's hardly a violation of human rights if a 21-year-old works to fund their own education and they will probably get more out of their classes if they do work. Anything easily attained is lightly valued. And this would drive down tuition costs too, because students would start demanding more financial accountability and less waste. After all, federal subsidies have increased college costs. These may seem like old-fashioned and even outmoded ideas, but the decline in work among the young bodes ill for the future. Many European nations have removed the young from the workforce, and the repercussion appears to be lower lifetime earnings. A renewed focus on working would also help erode the entitlement mentality ingrained in so many millennials. Instead of more benefits and handouts, this generation needs to get out there and get a job. Coming up on the close of the program here, we always wrap it up with a little bit of sports. As I mentioned, in golf, today starts the Masters Golf Tournament from Augusta, Georgia. In the NHL, the playoffs will begin next week. Some of the final teams are locking their positions in there. Major League Baseball season got underway this week, and it is safe to say that the Philadelphia Phillies have been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. And I hate saying that because they're my team, but oh my God, this is just going to be a bad year. In the NCAA basketball, Duke is the national champion. And, of course, I did win my bracket pool, so I'm very happy about that this year. All the Wisconsin fans and their coach are blaming poor officiating, to which I say, cry me a river. Now, where's that bank? I got to go cash this check. And in NASCAR, the teams head out to the Lone Star State for this Saturday night's race in the Duck Commander 500, which rolls off at 7:45 p.m. Saturday night. Good news is that the driver of the number 42 Target Chevrolet for Chip Ganassi Racing, Kyle Larson, has been cleared to race following a fainting spell during an autograph session 2 weeks ago. That's going to just about do it for the program. I did want to make mention one more time that we're always looking for topics and guests. I met with the folks from the Fimble Door Corporation. This is an overhead door manufacturing company. They're going to be coming in sometime in May to talk about ways that you can beautify your home with some high-quality doors. I told them, I said, I would love to use your product. I just got to make sure my kids aren't going to be shooting hockey pucks into it anytime soon. And so I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully you'll be able to follow along. We're also working on a couple things here at Hunterdon Chamber Radio where we may install a camera into the studio so you can watch us as we do what I do. The option of watching someone talk into a microphone or watching grass grow, the choice is yours. But I think the benefits are probably about the same. And we also have coming up, we've been talking with the folks at CNBC and Marcus Lemonis to have him come in as a guest one day. So hopefully we'll be able to get him on the air and Larry Wingate as well. Looking forward to that. Well, as always, it's been my pleasure joining you today, and I always end the show with some great advice I got from my father when I was just 6 years old that guides me in my personal and professional life every day. And maybe you can use it in your lives as well when he said, never let it rest until your good is better and your better is best. If you have ideas for upcoming programming topics or guests, email me at trophyjim@yahoo.com, or you can connect with me on LinkedIn, on Twitter at JimGano83, or on Facebook. I'm Jim Gano, and I'm taking care of business. Make it a productive week, everybody. And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all right. Taking care of business and working overtime.
Woman, I am the cavalry.
The news is sponsored by Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc.
In America, we believe in a future that is better than today. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has been working hard for their clients' futures, never taking a bailout, helping generations achieve dreams, buy homes, put their kids through college, retire how they want to. Today, Patton, Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. They are ready to help you feel more confident about your financial future. Put the strength of a global financial leader to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton, Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you achieve your dreams and goals. Call today at 908-713-6600.
That's 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated. Member FINRA and SIPC.
You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of